Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
A bunch of headlines, Tim and I just want to mention before we get into our next guest. The U.S. CDC updating its COVID-19 guidance for kindergarten through high school, providing flexibility for local decision makers to determine what's needed to safely keep kids in the classroom. We are, though, Tim, seeing infections rising across most regions of the world as that Delta variant spreads. That from the World Health Organization's chief scientist.
Yeah, we're also seeing South Africa going through a third wave as it's just battering the country right now. And in Canada, residents in Ontario could see the vast majority of restrictions lifted in August, a tale of two different stories when we look around the world when it comes to the vaccine and with COVID.
And then there's those late day headlines from Pfizer yesterday looking for emergency authorization for a third booster dose. Let's get to it with Dr. Ian Lusbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone, on the phone in New York City. Ian, so good to have you here. Happy Friday. I got to start with the Pfizer headline. We are all trying to understand what's going on. Do we all need to be all of a sudden now a little worried about when our vaccine is going to wear off, when we need to get a booster? What's the conversations you guys are having at the hospital?
Sure. Happy Friday. Thanks, guys. So there's no question that Delta variant, the Indian variant, is really becoming a global dominant strain. And that's surprising. We're really seeing evolution in action here, right? The organisms adapt to a changing environment. They tend to become more fit and outcompete other organisms, even if they're similar. So what we're really seeing is the virus adapt and change and become more contagious, higher concentrations in sneezing or coughing. At this point, though, it seems to be similar risk. In other words, we're not seeing more deaths really as a result of Delta other than in people who are not vaccinated. So for people who are not vaccinated, 99% of hospitalized patients are now patients who have not received vaccines. So this is certainly an argument for the vaccine. The concern is that we are seeing some breakthrough cases. So I've certainly had my share of patients who've received both vaccines and who then become symptomatic with the Delta variant. And a lot of this data is really based out of Israel, where they were vaccinated before we were, and they're beginning to see more breakthrough cases as well. So that's really the concern.
Why is that? Is it because of the Delta variant?
That's a great question. So it could be for a few reasons. One is, even though we're seeing antibodies that do slightly decrease over time, I can tell you most of the patients that we check for spike protein, and we try not to check everyone. I mean, that would be a waste of resources mm-hmm. if you're checking antibodies on everyone who's been vaccinated. But in select people who may be traveling or have other issues, those antibodies are sky high. But it does look like over time, and certainly in Israel, that antibody levels are dropping. So probably a combination of slightly lower antibody levels and perhaps a more aggressive variant in Delta is why we're seeing these breakthrough infections. The good news is, in terms of hospitalizations, and part of this is our data and part of it is Israel's data, you know, we're seeing a range of effectiveness that drops from 98% to about 93%. So the vaccines are still very effective. The question is, will that begin to wane over time? The other question that comes up is, should we be developing a Delta vaccine, which does make sense, but maybe we should put our efforts into vaccinating more people than giving a third dose to people who have already received two doses?
You're preaching to the choir. So what's interesting, though, is, and we've had this conversation this week, Dr. Lusbader, is that if you can't get those people to get the vaccine, you can't get to herd immunity. And that increasingly gives the virus the opportunity to seize on to new hosts to continue to mutate, which could potentially, I'm not a Susie pessimism or pessimistic kind of person, but it does open the door to creating a virus that is even more potent, more lethal, and more contagious than what we're dealing with right now, right? That's the reality of it.
Right. So the longer the virus replicates globally, the higher the chance of another variant developing. I think it's inevitable that there will be, you know, other variants, you know, Lambda all the way out to Iota. So we certainly feel that there will be more variants. The question is, will they be potentially more lethal? It is an argument to get everyone vaccinated. Of course, there's hesitancy, and rarely we are seeing, you know, odd symptoms after people get vaccinated. And, you know, you always have to tell patients, look, what is the risk of getting COVID versus the risk of the vaccine? The risk of, you know, having a complication from COVID is far greater than the risk of a complication from the vaccine, although we do see a handful of issues after that. But I agree with you. I think if we can't get people, everyone vaccinated, and someone is willing to take a third shot, that probably would provide some protection, yes.
Hey,
the
Dr.
question
Lusbader.
Is when.
Yeah, Dr. Lusbader, just in 20 seconds, are we going to be wearing masks again in the fall?
You know, I think right now we're seeing people well protected. There's no real urgent concern. The fall is a few months away. I don't see any real concerns. I think we're beginning to de-mask. If Delta really takes off or another variant, we may have to rethink that approach. But right now, people are taking their masks off, and I think they're doing well.
Let's get right back to Dr. Ian Lusbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone, on the phone in New York City. One more thing on the virus, and then we want to move on. What's the end game, you know, in terms of how you think, Dr. Lusbader, this works out? Is it just a case of a lot of people, I'm thinking U.S., I'm just looking at the U.S. situation, a lot of people get the vaccine, and that helps create some kind of herd immunity. You've got other people who are going to get the virus. They're either going to recover, develop their own immunity, or they're going to die off, unfortunately, to be so blunt. And then that's how we get to a better place, ultimately.
Well, this is a global problem, and even though we'd like to focus on the United States, we really can't. At this point, I believe globally, out of 8 billion, 8-plus billion people, somewhere in the 3 billion range may have received, you know, one or more vaccines. We don't really have great data from countries like China and Russia, and we also really don't know how effective those vaccines are. They seem to be not nearly as effective as the, you know, mRNA vaccines. I think we are going through this for at least another year or more. We've, back in 1918, it took 3 years and multiple waves with the Spanish flu. And I think we're going to see a higher death count and higher disability, and it may be even years of post-COVID or long-haul symptoms. This is not a completely benign illness, even if you get it. Loss of smell and taste and so forth may be transient, but there may be other issues. So we do need to work on things perhaps like ivermectin or other maybe off-the-shelf medications or other treatments or preventatives while we're waiting to vaccinate people. We really have not focused enough on that area of research, and I think we need to do that. And I think we still have kind of enough a rough year or two. In the United States, I believe, as we said, we still have a pretty good level of protection, you know, the 90-95%, even against the Delta variant. But in the areas of the country that are not vaccinated, they're going to have an increase in hospitalizations and other problems.
This is something that we know we're going to have to be living with for years. And as you mentioned, it's a question of treatment, it's a question of getting more and more people vaccinated. Dr. Lesbader, while we have you, I want to talk about the heat wave that is hitting parts of the United States. California bracing for another weekend of heat that could set records, temperatures above 110 degrees Fahrenheit in some parts of the Central Valley of California. As a doctor, as a medical professional, what do people need to know about surviving these type of heat?
Very important. We're definitely seeing some global changes. Why and for how long, we don't really know. I do want to mention something called Ariel's Checklist, which people can Google A-R-I-E-L, Ariel's Checklist, and it talks about acclimating to the heat. Not hiking in the middle of the day, slowly acclimating, hydrating, wearing loose clothing, getting enough sleep, and determining the wet bulb globe temperature. In other words, really, what is the ambient temperature? And why this is very important is because, based on your age, health, and activity, once the body's temperature begins to rise, a lot of problems happen. There can be nausea, headache, dehydration. And once the body's temperature goes above 104, often it's irreversible. You can have confusion, fainting, seizures, and death, quite frankly. So once you get irreversible damage to the brain or the heart, it's a real problem.
Wow.
So it's very important for people to understand the difference between heat exposure, heat exhaustion, and heat stroke. Heat stroke is really the life-threatening, you know, condition, and to be very careful to get into cool areas, have some air conditioning, even if that's not available, to minimize your exposure, because this is often undiagnosed, and people, by the time they're symptomatic, are often very far along with body temperatures and core temperatures that are very elevated beyond what they're aware of. And people around them should pay attention and see if someone does not look good when they're outside. Respond right away. Don't think they're making this up. It's a very lethal and often underdiagnosed condition.
And increasingly, we're seeing these hotter temperatures coming earlier and sooner and more frequent in places that normally didn't, like the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, that was shocking.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. Thank you so much, Dr. Ian Lesbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone Medical Center, on the phone in New York City.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes. 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So our top story on this Friday, of course, President Biden signing that sweeping executive order. It's all about promoting competition across American industries and in the labor market. He's calling on regulators to take steps to lower drug prices, toughen merger enforcement in tech and banking, give workers more power to change jobs and negotiate higher wages. There is a lot, or I should say there are a lot of moving parts to this. Let's get to it and with what the Bloomberg audience needs to know.
David McLaughlin is Justice Department of Justice reporter for Bloomberg News. He joins us on the phone from Washington, D.C. David, this thing is wide-ranging. It's far. It's sweeping. What do we need to know about the most important parts of it?
Yeah, so it covers about 72 different initiatives and proposals. And the basic idea is that, competition and antitrust enforcement is primarily handled by the Federal Trade Commission and the Justice Department, and they review mergers and monopoly conduct and that sort of thing. But what the idea of this order is to basically say to all government agencies that oversee different industries that you have a role to play in promoting competition through rules and regulations, and that those agencies should be or could be doing more to promote competition in the markets that they oversee.
So is this about consumers winning? Is this about America winning against the rest of the world? What's the end game? I'm kind of a payoff kind of girl. Like, what's the point?
Well, what I think this is a response to is a concern that many economists, antitrust experts have been raising over the last few years about industries becoming, over the last couple of decades, very consolidated. And we see that mostly, or maybe primarily, in the tech industry with the big tech companies like Amazon and Google, et cetera. But really, it's an issue that many people see happening across the economy. And the worry is that it's leading to maybe higher prices, less choice for consumers. There's also this labor market issue. If you live in a town with fewer employers, this is definitely an issue in rural areas. You know, they have more leverage over you as a worker, and you have less leverage to bargain for higher wages, which the president mentioned today. So this is really an effort to go beyond tech, the stories that tend to be in the news right now, to cover other industries and help consumers and workers.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was it's funny. We were just talking with Joel Weber of Business Week and Eric Balchunas about David versus Goliath, and it was about engine number one going after ExxonMobil, and they had a big win. And is that what it's about, is David versus Goliath, individuals, consumers who in many ways, and some workers, and we saw this play out during the pandemic, right, that really got hurt hard and were left behind, while we know that there were some workers that were able to work at home, there was no really disruption in their lives. So is that what it's about, like getting to some of those inequities that we really saw big time during the pandemic?
Yeah, because there's plenty of research, and some people dispute this, but there is research showing that. So when you have a monopoly or dominant firm in a market, of course that company may have the power to raise prices and may lead to less choice. But some people think there are wider macroeconomic effects on productivity, and income inequality. Like the superstar companies may pay their workers very well, but others in the economy who may not be working at those companies might be losing out. And so there are worries that when the dominant firms or just a handful of dominant firms are controlling markets, there are bigger problems that are being caused. And so I think that's what the White House is trying to get at with it.
So, David, now, what happens now? Because as we saw, we were listening to this, we were watching it, it was playing on our YouTube when Biden signed this executive order. He was flanked by members of his cabinet, by antitrust officials. What do they go and do now in order to put this into action?
Right, so a lot of this now gets into rulemaking and regulation, which can be, as you know, kind of a long, grueling process because it can involve court challenges. So for example, one of the proposals or directives that is in the order is restoring net neutrality, the requirement that internet providers treat internet traffic as basically the same. And listeners might remember that that was a big fight for many years. The Obama administration implemented net neutrality rules. They were challenged in the courts. Eventually, they were undone. And so that went on for many years. So the impact was not immediate. And so I think that could be, I don't know if every proposal will be fought in the courts, but some certainly will be. So it could take some time, but even some agencies like the FTC are already acting to implement some of these ideas.
Well, it's interesting. When you were kicked off, you said 72 new different initiatives and proposals, all government agencies overseeing different industries. It's all about being more competitive. And I was thinking, yeah, but it's an executive order, which could be overturned in a couple of years if there's a new president in the White House. But I do wonder, is this potentially going to create some significant changes in terms of how U.S. big business operates?
Well, that's certainly the hope by those who want more aggressive antitrust enforcement. See a lot of problems in different markets. I mean, I think a lot of the directives in the order were telling like the antitrust enforcement agencies to get tougher on mergers, and so that's a decision that the agencies will have to make, obviously based on the facts of specific deals. But you know what this order does is it gives political support to enforcers and other regulators to take tougher action. They're not going to feel like they're out in left field or unsupported if they want to do something.
Right, and they face their boss in the Oval Office on Monday. If it's like, hey, wait a minute, we had that big signing, remember that?
Get to work.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much, David McLaughlin, for breaking it down for us. Bloomberg News Department of Justice reporter on the phone from Washington, D.C.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic. From Bloomberg Radio.
Tim, what are you doing on Sunday?
I am going to be here. I'm going to be hosting, co-hosting with Ed Ludlow and Emily Chang, the special Billionaires Going to Space. This one, Richard Branson.
Looking forward to it. This could be some cool stuff. And you know who's going to be on the ground there in New Mexico?
None other than Bloomberg News' Ed Ludlow, reporter, who's right now on the phone from San Francisco, right in between jumping off a plane, getting back from Sun Valley, about to get on another plane to head to Spaceport America. Ed, are you tired yet?
I'm tired, but I'm excited. You know, these are not bad gigs.
No. They're great. Hey, so take us through exactly what's going to happen on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, that's a good place to start, right? So the Virgin Galactic launch system is a two-parter. Imagine an airplane that is dual fuselage with a big wing that connects both sides, and then the actual spaceship is planted in the middle. So it takes off like a normal airplane. It climbs and climbs and climbs to a height, which is a little bit sort of a surprise to some people, but around 50,000 feet. Then
50,000 feet, and just for context, 50,000 feet, that's about 20,000 feet higher than like a commercial airliner would fly if it were flying across the United States.
So it is pretty high altitude, and that's just for stage one. So you hit 50,000 feet, and then the control release, and the rocket part drops from the middle of the wing, and then its engine ignites, and then it accelerates rapidly on an upward arc to around 50 to 55 miles above Earth's atmosphere, which is a point of controversy because there's debate about whether that really is going into space or not.
Is it?
Well, if you are NASA, and I think NASA is a pretty good standard, you know, to go by. NASA says that anything above 50 miles above the Earth's atmosphere, above Earth, is space. That anyone goes beyond that point is technically an astronaut. But others disagree. The others say that the Kármán line, which is 62 miles above Earth, the kind of internationally recognized boundary of space, is true space. And Blue Origin, if you follow them on Twitter, they've been tweeting the differences between their system and their ambitions versus Virgin Galactic's. And they say that Virgin Galactic are not going into space. Blue Origin, which is the company owned by Jeff Bezos, says that they simply are operating a high-altitude plane.
Okay, hold on. What do you think about this, Ed? Because here we are. This is not Wendy's versus McDonald's, like duking it out on Twitter,
right? Or is
right?
it?
That's a really good analogy.
Like, why is this happening? Because it's not like, you know, this is open to normal people yet. Like, who cares? This is cool.
Well, the last time that the Virgin Galactic CEO, Michael Colglazier, was on Bloomberg Television, he said this is not about a race between two billionaires. Let's be honest, guys.
Oh, come on. Of course it is. Let's get real.
You know, Jeff Bezos walked past me yesterday in Sun Valley. I shouted out to him, Jeff, how are you feeling about Blue Origin? How are you feeling about July 20th? And he didn't reply. By comparison, Richard Branson has been on international media and TV for weeks drumming up interest and excitement about this. You know, when they do reach that 50 to 55 miles above Earth height, they will experience weightlessness. There will be six people on board total, two pilots, four crew members. They call them crew members. They'll unbuckle and they'll float around for a few minutes. And I've never felt or experienced weightlessness. I would love to, believe me. But I personally would take that to be in space because I'm not sure where else you could do that.
Do you have 250 grand to go and do a 4-day?
I think you know the answer to that question. I do not have the capital to fund my own space. But that's why I say this is a billionaire's race, because ultimately, you know, the near-term ambitions for these two companies are funded by different means. You know, Virgin Galactic is a publicly traded company. It was a de-SPAC. And Blue Origin is bankrolled by Jeff Bezos. But at the end of the day, it's those two men that have made this happen. And they're putting themselves in pole position to be among a few people in history to ever go into space, you know, as civilians.
Well, and this is all about the development of space tourism, right?
Correct.
And you look at Virgin Galactic shares. We've been talking about it this week on air. On a tear this year, they've more than doubled. Is there a viable business that these billionaires, these space billionaires, are creating, Ed, that will be with us for years to come?
So what Virgin Galactic say about this is that their business model and future profitability is based on the efficiency of manufacturing the spacecraft, because theirs is not a rocket that just simply shoots straight up. It's a plane. It's more energy efficient. But they basically say that the way they go about building these planes is that they can do this at volume and they can get regular flights. They say they charged around $250,000 for the first 600 people that signed up. They're not taking orders at the moment. They're not taking bookings. But they're very confident that going forward that they will be cash flow positive and reach profitability based on the business model. There are others out there that disagree. I think we've discussed this, guys. Elon Musk says that launching as a business has a peak of about $3 billion a year, regardless of the payload that you're sending up. For him, the money's in the data, you know, Starlink, space internet, things like that.
Right.
You know, and Elon Musk, with respect, is a good authority on this. But Virgin Galactic is very, very confident that this is a viable business model.
And Virgin's got Virgin Orbit, which is not connected to Virgin Galactic anymore, but it's still part of the Virgin Empire. And it, you know, it does satellites.
Yeah, it does, and for a very similar delivery mechanism.
Yeah.
It's basically a custom 747 that goes to high altitude, and the rocket drops off the bottom, and then from that altitude launches on a sort of arc. But same result, right? They put satellites into orbit, and the money comes from the data generated.
So $250,000 a pop for a trip times 600 is $150 million.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Virgin Galactic has almost $12 billion market cap.
And when it went public, it was a fraction of that. I mean, it was $10 a share because it was a SPAC.
I got to love it. I think continuing space exploration is an interesting thing. And I'm looking forward to that special.
Oh, thank you. It's going to be fun. Sunday. 9 a.m.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder.
That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
I'm driving in my car, I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That punk music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, just about 10 and a half minutes to go. We are heading towards the...
Already, Carol? Time flies when you're having fun.
Time flies when you're having fun. It has been a fun week, an interesting week, some volatility this week. And let's get to it with Nadia Lavelle. She is Senior U.S. Equity Strategist at UBS Global Wealth Management. Nadia joining us on the phone in New York City. Nadia, good to have you here. How do you explain this week? We had some selling, we had some buying, it's a risk on trade today. What do you believe investors are focusing on right now?
Yes, it's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
So in terms of the volatility this week, we do think that it has to do with a confluence of things ranging from, you know, concerns around peak growth, labor supply shortages potentially curtailing growth. Obviously, the Delta variants and the emerging Lambda variants is given some pause and concerns around global growth. I do think that, though, that investors should be focused on the overall strong economic growth that we're expecting in Q2 and that trend to sort of continue into the back half of the year. And then we expect to see above trend growth into 2022.
It's going to be okay, right? At least for the next
it's
6 months. Right?
Absolutely. It's going to be okay. Earnings kick off next week. We are expecting another strong quarter of earnings. And at the end of the day, what drives the stock market is earnings.
Yeah.
And we do think that earnings is set up to beat. I mean, I'll unpack that just a little bit more for you. When we look at Q2 expectations, we think that they're just too low, right?
What do you mean? You think
too low.
Yeah. Wait, we are expecting 64% earnings growth on the S&P 500. That is too low.
Carol, not enough. Not
really?
Enough,
what?
Let's unpack that. You know,
okay.
When you look at what expectations are versus Q1, is actually expected to decelerate. And so we don't agree with that. Huh. You should not expect, you should expect Q1 to be the lowest quarter of the year in a non-recessionary year. Right now, consensus expectation is for Q2 to decline about 8% versus Q1, which is just peculiar given that economic growth in Q2 is expected expected to be more than 3 percentage points acceleration from Q1. What drives earnings? Economic growth. So if economic growth is stronger in Q2, earnings growth should be even stronger than it was in Q1.
Nadia, can we call you a bull?
I am a bull. You can't tell from my voice.
I was
going to
say.
So how does an investor prepare for this?
I think we continue to like the value trade. We know we saw some weakness in it over the last couple of weeks. We've seen growth outperform value. Today is a better day for value. We think that trend will continue because we think that that's where the upside will be in earnings. The more economically sensitive sectors would like consumer discretionary, financials, even energy, and those sectors tend to be in the value index. And so we expect them to beat on earnings in coming weeks, and that should help to propel those stocks even up further. So those are the sectors that we'd be looking to add to. And from a value growth standpoint, we've been looking to add to value.
So what about the names that have really provided a lot of momentum? Those big tech names, the big FANG stocks, have they already had their day in your view?
In our view, they have had their moment. Okay. And the reason why they've had their moment recently is because rates have pulled back, right? And so that has allowed like valuation for those high valuation stocks, right, the discount rate has come down, and so that's caused a rotation in those tech stocks. We think some of that is going to reverse, and value will start to outperform again, because we do think that interest rates are going to move higher. We're starting to see that again today. We expect that the yield on the 10-year will get to 2% by year-end, and that is not a favorable setup for higher value stocks.
So we expect them to see some headwinds. So then what happens to the high-flying tech companies when interest rates go up like that?
We expect them to stall out again. As we saw earlier in the year, we expect that headwind to come back and we'll stall out, and that's why we continue to prefer value. You think also economic growth favors those value sectors. So the growth that we're seeing in value is just much higher than what we're seeing in the growth sectors.
2% on the 10-year by the end of the year, that's your forecast. But we know the Fed is willing to let things go a little hot. Do you think the Fed changes monetary policy significantly before the end of the year, whether it's reducing asset purchases and letting things to start to roll off the balance sheet? And do they do anything when it comes to rates?
So yeah, we do expect that the Fed will start to message in the tapering of the balance sheet at Jackson Hole or in September, and we expect that tapering to start either in December or early next year. So that would be the change in terms of policy for us. In terms of the interest rates and move in short end rates, we don't think the Fed is going to do that anytime soon. Mm. We're looking for late 2023, early 2024.
Late 2023, early 2024 before the Fed starts to change rates?
Exactly. Wow. Exactly.
That's a long time.
That is a long time, and so a lot can happen between now and then. But as we know, the Fed is very focused on economic data. It's very data dependent. But we think that we don't see anything on the horizon to derail the economic growth that we're seeing.
And so inflation transitory in your view?
Transitory in our view. Now we'll get CPI numbers next week. We'll get the producer price index next week. Right. Don't be surprised if those run hot. We already know that. The Fed has also agrees with that. And so we do expect them to run a little bit hot. But by the time we get into year end and early 2022, we expect inflation to start to normalize.
So Nadia, what derails this bull market, and when does that happen?
I think what could derail this, it tends to be Fed policy, but I think that the Fed is very careful this time around. Also, this new inflation regime that they have, you know, average inflation over the course of the cycle, gives them a lot more flexibility. And also, the Fed cares very much about the labor market, and so those numbers will be closely watched. So I think the chance of a Fed policy mistake that we have seen in the past that tends to derail the economy and the market, we think that probability is lower. Now, the other thing that, of course, that we're all closely watching is these variants. Mm-hmm. But
you got
the
there.
Those will be managed. You got you.
No, it's interesting because everyone brings it up, and I think it just is a reminder that is on everyone's radar, because that's the big outlier and that's the big unknown.
Yes, but even the variants, like I think even there's a lower probability of that even derailing the equity markets, because I think that, one, the science is better positioned to handle it, and also the markets themselves. We've already seen this Delta variant. We've already seen pharma companies coming out working on booster shots to help combat specifically the Delta variant.
Right.
And so we think that that's going to happen. And so the market is getting more accustomed and also relying on pharma.
We definitely have a little bit more of the playbook at this point, even though it's still being written. So much fun. Thank you. Great Friday check-in on the markets.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.